So the smell of the canvas from your play tent, I remember that a lot on a hot summer's day. Of course, there's the song on the radio when you were going on holiday, the sound of a foghorn taking you in an instant back to that school trip to a lighthouse. Your memory, everything you are, your past, your life, it's all stored away within the folds of your brain. Some things are pretty easy to recall, while others just, well, don't want to be found, it appears. Now, this week, we're finding out about the power of memory and what happens when it can go wrong. And today, we find out more about those things which trigger recollections of things that we've experienced, good and bad. Well, to help us do this is Dr. Linda Parnham, a clinical psychologist from the Wiltshire Psychology Centre, which is based in Brinkworth, and is with us right now. Linda, hello.
Hello.
What exactly is going on with the memory, then? Whereabouts is it in my brain, if I was trying to find it?
The memory is located in the limbic system. So the limbic system is what we tend to call our emotional brain, and it's right in the heart of the brain. It's really tucked right down in the middle. And that's where most of the memory is stored, in something called the hippocampus, which is like a little seahorse shape, which is why it's called the hippocampus, and that's tucked away right in the middle.
Okay, why is it there? Do we know why it's there in particular? Is it to protect it, or...?
No, I don't know if we know that, actually, but it's tucked right in the middle. There's several parts to the limbic system. The hippocampus, the memory bit, is one. And then there's another bit right next to it, so we're all technical terms here, but called the amygdala. And that's like two little almond shapes, one on either side of the brain that meets in the middle. And the amygdala is all about processing emotion. So we've got the memory store and we've got the emotion store right next to each other, which then leads us on to understand how memories and emotions are so closely linked.
Right. Let's talk about, we've got smells, we have taste, we have sounds, we have visual clues as well. Certain things just trigger those off with us. I mean, it's not everything, but just certain things in our lives suddenly throw a strike back to a memory. But songs do this really well, and of course, yes, so do smells. So yes, what's going on here?
Essentially, when we're triggered by something, whether it's a sight or a smell or we hear something, there's a little chain of events that links back to the hippocampus. And it links to the hippocampus and it fires the amygdala. So we get this sense of, what am I remembering and how do I feel about it? So when we encode a new memory, at that moment when we learn something and we have an association with it, be it good or bad, it gets wired in together. And it gets wired in then with what's happening at the time. So when we then re-experience something we coded in at the time, it sort of unlocks that filing system. It brings that file to the surface.
It all makes sense, but it's also incredibly clever.
It is very, very clever and very fast. It's almost instantaneous. Particularly with smells, we often think about why smells ring bells, as it were. So, for example, with smells, so what's known as the olfactory system, which is our smell system. So in our nose, we have about 1,000 smell receptors, and they continue to be regenerated over our lifetime. Now, the olfactory system is like a motorway that links straight to the limbic system, which, of course, is where our memory and where our emotions are. Now, senses such as hearing, they go the long way round. They don't go immediately to the limbic system. They sort of take the scenic route, whereas smell is like a direct train straight into that limbic system. So, for example, when we smell something, there's an almost instant reaction where the memory suddenly pops up.
Okay, and what about taste? Because I haven't really sort of talked much about taste, but taste can also have that effect. Where does that fit into things?
Because taste is massively about smell. Huge amounts of taste are actually governed by smell. So if you blindfold somebody and you pinch their nose and you give them a potato to eat, they'll guess that it's an apple. It's all about the smell. It's all about smell.
Writing that down, I've got to go home and experiment this weekend, which would be a really good idea. Now, smells can be good and also can be bad. I mean, certain smells. I mean, I'm guessing here that if anybody's been in a house fire or had an experience like that, then that's going to create a bit of trauma in your life, and you're not going to forget that in a hurry. But equally, you have some lovely smells like freshly cut grass.
Absolutely.
So, you know, how does that all kind of work?
The way that works is, again, how it's coded at the time. So if I smell sun cream, then in my memory, I think of summer holidays, and I think of being on the beach or being by the sea. So I have the trigger, which is the smell of the sun cream. I have the memory, which is sitting on the beach. And I have the emotional association, which is all lovely. Now, for one of my children, who isn't a fan of sun cream, when he sees the sun cream bottle and smells it, what he remembers is being at nursery and some going in his eye. So when he sees sun cream, he goes, oh no, and he's got a whole different memory that's activated. In the same way, for example, something like lilies. Some people love lilies and think of beautiful hotels. Other people see lilies or smell lilies and think of funerals. So they have a very different association.
And, of course, in relation to the work that you do, I presume that memories can also help us to get better, to cope with difficult times in life, because in a way memories also can cause a problem for us, anxiety, depression, but they can also be used or changed in order to help us through some difficult periods.
Absolutely. When we're working with trauma, and particularly post-traumatic stress disorder, we're hugely working with memory. And often what's happened then is that the memory at the time that it was encoded had a lot of emotion, usually fear attached to it. And what we need to do is it ends up sort of banked in the wrong part of the brain. And a lot of the work of the therapy is to actually shift it around in the brain and get it settled in its proper place so that it's a past memory. So people with post-traumatic stress disorder, so the example you gave of a house fire, somebody who hasn't had help with that trauma, if they smell smoke, the memory of that house fire comes back. And as you say, it takes them right back instantaneously as if it was happening all over again. So the memory is just too active, it's too present, and it needs to be dealt with and filed away.
How easy is it to do that, though?
It's specialist work, but it's actually not that hard for the person to do. It can be distressing, it can be hard going, but not normally for a long amount of time. And if you're with a well-trained clinician, it's a very safe process to do, because you're dealing with old stuff, and part of it is knowing that it's old stuff, it's been and it's gone and it's not happening again.
What is the future of this? I mean, I presume we're learning more and more about the human brain. I mean, we're just a very complex organ, isn't it? But, you know, from your point of view, in the field of work that you work within, are we knowing now a lot more than we did maybe, you know, even a couple of years ago?
Massive amounts more. And a lot of that is through dedicated research and brilliant researchers. A lot of it is from brain scans. We can see huge amounts of things on brain scans that we couldn't do before, and they're getting cleverer all the time. And then particular therapy. So there's a therapy we use for trauma, which is called eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, which is not a terribly catchy term. We call it EMDR, but that's all about working with people's brains, very much with the brain and with the trauma and how they've stored trauma memory. And again, the more this is used and the more it's researched and the evidence base is strengthened, we're learning month upon month, really.
Now, I know that we're going to talk about this a bit later this week, but so much in the news now about dementia as well, and the effect that there's nothing worse, because in a way you're not just forgetting things, you're forgetting who you are as well in the process. I mean, that's a pretty tough thing. I mean, I don't know how much you've come across that in your work, but again, it just goes to show the power of memory and what effect that can have on us as individuals and who we are.
Absolutely. Without memory, we lose our orientation. We don't really know who we are and where we are and who we're with. And that's an incredibly frightening, disabling experience to go through. So I don't tend to particularly work with that specialism anymore. No. I did when I was training. But again, it is a specialist area, and it's something, you know, psychologists do devote their careers to working with people who have memory impairments.
I'm glad we kind of touched on that, really, because, you know, we do think of memory. We think of oh, yes, I've got a terrible memory. I can't remember things, or I remember this, or I remember that. We sort of talk about it in a very superficial way, but we don't realise how much that is at the heart of who we are.
Absolutely. And interestingly, when people have difficulties with anxiety or depression, one of the things they'll often say is, my memory shot to pieces. Yeah. And actually their memory will be completely fine, but their attention, their ability to concentrate is what's impaired. So then when they try and remember something, it's not there for them to remember because they didn't lay down the memory because they were distracted with their worry.
Interesting. I could talk all day about this. It's such a fascinating subject, it really is. But I hope we've sort of, you know, at least touched the tip of the iceberg and give us a bit of insight. And thank you for, you know, revealing a bit more about the human memory for us. Dr. Linda Parnham, thank you very much.